today, our guest is Sam Brand. Sam is a British professional cyclist from the Isle of Man who was diagnosed with type 1 at the age of 10. Growing up, Sam played lots of sports and competed in triathlon, qualifying to race in the ITU World Championships. He was spotted there by Team Novo Nordisk, a team whose athletes all live with type 1, which led to him joining their elite triathlon squad. He later decided to focus exclusively on cycling and joined the Team Novo Nordisk development squad in 2016. Following a strong showing, he debuted in the pro ranks as a stagiaire, which is like an apprentice, in August 2017, and joined the pro team fully the next year in 2018. Sam has ridden in many races, including the one-day classic, the Milano San Remo, and has represented his country in two Commonwealth Games. So welcome, Sam, and I hope I got the facts right.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think you've literally just told my whole story, so I could probably sign off now. There you go. No, but that's a brilliant introduction. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to say, before I get going, thank you to everyone, you know, to Tom, to inviting me to speak to all you guys in Diabetes Chat, because as I mentioned to Tom earlier, actually, I get as much motivation and inspiration out of the whole community as we try to give the community. So, you know, for me, this is a huge opportunity to be able to say how inspired I am by everybody in the community and everybody in our family. You know, it's huge. And thank you guys so much for putting this together.
No, you're very welcome. I'm really excited to speak to you. So we usually start off with, we call it 90 second questions, but it usually takes longer than 90 seconds. But they're a bit quick fiery, and some of the topics that we talk about we'll pick up in more detail later, or we'll see where it goes, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's perfect. I've just had Mastermind on the TV, so it's been a warm-up, I guess.
I was going to say, hopefully not as taxing as that.
Well, hopefully
you
not.
Never know. So we'll start off with your name and your occupation.
Okay, it's easy. I'm Sam Brand, and I'm a professional cyclist with Team Novo Nordisk.
And when were you diagnosed with type 1?
Well, a bit longer than quick, but World Diabetes Day, actually, in 2001. So 14th of November 2001, at 10 years old.
Oh, my goodness. That was well planned.
Well, I think that's kind of why I'm where I am now. You know, it kind of gave me a mission, and I'm fully behind having a mission and a purpose. So it really kind of set everything in motion that day.
Yeah. Do you use sensors or finger prick?
Both.
Okay. And when you finger prick, do you change your lancet every time?
Oh, do you want the do you want the correct answer or the other correct answer?
The truth.
Does anybody?
I was just going to say, I always say when I was diagnosed, they gave me a lifetime supply of lancets in one box.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. You probably still got the same box.
Probably. Do you use multiple daily injections or a pump?
Multiple daily injections.
Okay. That's interesting. We'll talk about that later, I am sure.
But again, everybody's individual. That's obviously something I have to highlight. You know, it's all, there's just, it's a regime that I built around my sort of diabetes and my lifestyle.
Know,
everybody's different and all that.
Yeah. Oh, there's no wrong or right.
Yeah,
here,
of course, 100%.
The facts of it.
Yes.
What do you think is worse, being high or low?
Oh, I guess that depends on the mood I'm in at the time. So, well, I think a bit of both, you know, try and stay as mainstream in the middle as possible. But, you know, sometimes the problem with the either or is you have to make a decision based on either, don't you? So, you know, sometimes it can be inconvenient to be either.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm a bit like that in that one. And what one thing, or have you one thing that you like about having diabetes?
I mean, I tried to see my diabetes as only positive, and that sounds not awful, but it sounds like I don't want to come across like I'm the oracle, like I know everything about diabetes. I know a lot about my diabetes, but I know everybody's different and everybody struggles, and everybody has 2 days that aren't, no 2 days are the same. But I do try and have as much positive output on it. And, you know, and like the positive of having diabetes is our wonderful community. I call it a family. But, you know, when I was diagnosed with diabetes on World Diabetes Day, it gave me an opportunity. It gave me a routine. It gave me a purpose, and it gave me a family. So it gave me something to fight for. And, you know, a lot of people have a lot of things going on, but the main thing that life for me is built around is hope, and the hope that we can affect change, the hope. I really want to change the world, and I make no sort of qualms about that or arguments. I always tell everybody I want to change the world, and that starts by step. And I think with a diagnosis of diabetes, I'm able to begin that journey of changing the world, whether that's with diabetes, whether it's with something else. You know, I want to affect change in a positive way. So I'm not trying to say diabetes is easy, but the good thing is I was welcomed to a fantastic family and a fantastic community.
That's brilliant. Now, this one might be a difficult question for you.
Ooh.
What one thing don't you like about diabetes?
Oh, I don't like. Okay, it's not. Maybe I've skipped the question a little bit, but it's not what I don't like. It's what I want. I don't like the misconceptions. I don't like the ideas that we have to constantly defend ourselves. It feels sometimes, you know, you probably get that. And I guess people listening who don't have diabetes won't understand it. But that's part of the problem, or part of the issue is that there is a lack of understanding, a lack of appreciation of the daily rigors of diabetes. And that's something that I want to start with in helping the change, because, you know, obviously with the types of diabetes and the misunderstandings and that sort of stuff, that's what I don't like. And I feel like sometimes it feels like we have to be defensive of ourselves, something we never asked for. So that's probably the hardest thing. But then it's my opportunity to help sort of empower other people by being able to explain that. So it's also a conversation starter. So it's not really a negative, but it's something that if I had to pick something, that would be it.
Okay. Do you love or hate the smell of insulin?
Oh, Marmite, hey? I say that. I mean, it's not something that I really have thought about before. Although I did hear a story, somebody going through security had to taste their insulin once, which I can't imagine being very nice. But for me, it's just, it's very clinical, isn't it? And that's kind of like just a, it's not so bad. I don't mind.
And final one for this. If you were on a desert island and you could take three things, what would you take? But all your diabetes stuff is already on the island, so you don't have to worry about that.
I was going
to
say that. It would be an easy decision then, wouldn't it? Yeah. Does that include a fridge? Do I have a fridge there as well? So that's probably
if you needed it, your insulin.
There you go. So I don't need to ask for a fridge to keep my drinks cool. desert island, what would I take? Good question. I guess there wouldn't be much need for a bike and a desert island. So, although I would be a bit lost probably without my bike, but if I can take one item that's like a clutch of items, either like an iPod or my record player, you know, I love music. So if I could take my record player, some vinyls as one item, then that's probably good, because I'm not going to have to pick three albums to take, because that would be, that'd be a nightmare. So I'd take some form of music. Then three, I mean, it's difficult to say, you know. I mean, you've put me on the spot here, you know. Excluding diabetes supplies, I'm an absolute Haribo fiend, so I might have to take Haribo beyond the necessity of hypos.
That's fine.
Again, I'm going to have to ask for a lifetime supply of Haribo, because I don't know how long I'm going to be there. and then what else would I take? I take my Manx flag wherever I go. I've probably missed something, but my grandma, before she passed away, gave me a Manx flag, and that goes in every single kit bag that I take away.
Oh, that would be nice.
Looks like I take my Manx flag everywhere I go.
Brilliant. Well, I'm now going to hand over to one of my co-hosts, Gary, who's going to go through with you a bit about your diagnosis and your life with diabetes before come back to me and we'll talk some. Oh, grand, hopefully.
Wonderful. I look forward to it.
So, Gary, over to you.
Thanks, Flipper. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm brilliant, thank you. Even better speaking to you.
So I just want to start off with saying thank you for highlighting something. Everybody in here will probably laugh at this and tell you I do it all the time, that I'm forever saying that diabetes has to be treated. And I don't know if you caught in at the bit we were talking about. Technology and things for diabetes have to be right for the person. The person has to want or have a need for it to be. Yes. So I just want to thank you for reiterating the importance of our diabetes is ours. It's nobody else's to tell us how to do it. We should have choices that we want to do. And I just want to thank you for that, because it's something I always advocate for, even although I'm a lover of technology. I know there's people out there that don't want to use technology, and that's fine. I also want to say I have admiration for you in terms of doing multi-daily injections. Being somebody that's a sports person must be one of the hardest things to try and master. So I have admiration for the fact that you have committed potentially more than 100% into getting what's right for you. So I just want to say I have admiration for that. I'll make my bit easy as possible for you so that it doesn't feel like I'm bombarding you with loads of questions. So what we're going to start with
is... No, please do.
If you can just share with the community a little bit about your diagnosis. So what symptoms did you have? And when you were diagnosed with diabetes, so did you have any symptoms?
Well, I'll start with thank you so much for your kind words. You know, we all do our best, don't we? So it's really nice to hear that from you, and I appreciate that. You know, it's nice to be there to support each other. In terms of diagnosis, yeah, I had the standard, you know, or what I guess we call the standard increased thirst, weight loss. I was losing weight. I was drinking a lot. I mean, I think my mum mentioned that I was trying to go to plant pots and drink everything out of them just to try and drink, because they were probably sick of me asking for another drink. So it's not a lot I do remember about it, but I do remember mainly the main symptom in a memory is increased thirst. Yeah.
And I think that's the one. I think everybody remembers that one, to be honest with you, because I think I was diagnosed as a baby, so I don't remember much about mine. But I remember growing up, I could go through 4 liters of juice in less than a day and still be craving for more juice. And I used to have to get told to stop because it was at the point I was getting through that much juice that my mum and dad were sick of giving me juice. And they're like, no, stop it now, because you don't need that much juice. And so I know what it's like. So yeah. I'm assuming with that then, was it your mum or somebody in the family that spotted your signs, or did you notice them yourself?
Well, I was off school we'd just come back from holiday, and I'd been sick on holiday, not sick, but a cold and that flu-y symptoms. And that was about 3-4 weeks beforehand. And then I came back and mum was working, and I was, my auntie was looking after me, and my mum had got a doctor's appointment already lined up because I wasn't right. But then we went to my auntie's, and I remember I used to absolutely adore 7-Up, and I do now still, but I was absolutely smashing my way through 7-Up, and I kept asking my auntie for more. And my auntie is very much to the point, like me, like my mum, like all of us. She was like, you need to take this lad to the doctors today. So it was kind of like, for her, she was a childminder, and she was always on to the situation and switched on to those things, because you're always asking for a drink, whereas if other things are happening, you probably don't notice that increase awareness or asking for a drink all the time. So probably at home I would just go and help myself, whereas that was at my auntie's, I'm always going to ask. So she probably saw it a bit more, and then from there mum took me home, and we went straight to the doctors then, and just we didn't wait for the next day for the appointment. We just went straight to the doctors.
Yeah, and I think I get what you mean by that, like when you're at family's house, even although it's family, you still ask before you take things.
Oh yeah, of course.
So I think what you mean with your aunt noticing. So what we would love to know is, how did you and your parents come to terms with the diagnosis and how did you cope at the time? So was it hard or was it fairly easy for you?
Well, I remember my mum actually speaking to the pharmacist a couple of days before thinking it might be diabetes. But at that time, I mean, 21 years ago, it wasn't talked about like it's talked about now. And, you know, Google isn't what it is now. And Twitter definitely wasn't around. So there wasn't that wealth of information. And that's a curse and a good thing. It's at the same time in nowadays, you know, sometimes there's too much information, Dr. Google and all that. But it was kind of like, for me, the Isle of Man diabetes setup, we had a wonderful nurse, Pam, and she was just phenomenal, Pam Unsworth, and she's probably one of the reasons why I tried to see everything in such a positive light, because she's an absolutely phenomenal nurse and no longer works, but absolutely phenomenal, and the team in the Isle of Man was insane. So I don't ever remember having it as a negative, and I get this is why I kind of like want to affect that change again. I'll keep talking about that, but like, you know, we go to a doctor's and it's really difficult to be diagnosed. And this is just my own view that you, a lot of the time we're diagnosed by GPs who also don't have that experience in terms of if I could have everyone diagnosed by a diabetes specific team, it would make the situation a lot easier, I think. That's just my opinion because they're masters in that scenario. You know, they know the information. Whereas if you're being diagnosed in a clinic and a GP, like they might not have that understanding. I'm not trying to say that they don't understand, but you know, like it's not their specialist field, shall we say? So I remember going straight to the hospital and it being just. I actually got a silly little story that I'll tell you, but I remember the only other time I had of going to hospital, my brother had his appendix out and my uncle brought around like a big bag of sweets. And I was like, get in there. My uncle's going to be around any minute with a big bag of sweets. Can't wait. So my brother had this whole Tesco carrier bag full of sweets and then mine never came. So I was a bit sad about that. But apart from that, it's all there. All positive, you know, really. And that's what I want other people to have. I want them to have a positive diagnosis. You know, being on a team of athletes with type 1 diabetes, you hear some stories about you'll never be able to ride again. But as my boss says, who's also type 1, he has been since 7 months old, Phil Sutherland, he's like, exercise is the billion-dollar drug that's never prescribed. So to get on the bike is a lot of the time that therapeutic answer or that sort of answer that can help, you know. So I like to think that that's helped as well.
And we get, I think everybody in the room gets when you're talking about GP. We know, and if there is any GPs in here, just so they know, we know that we're not saying that yous don't know what yous are doing. It's just I think with a GP, because they don't specialise in that specific area, it's just more a general practitioner. They know a little bit about it, but having a specialist team that can describe things a little bit better to you and explain things, I think that makes the process of acceptance a little bit easier of diabetes.
Of course.
And I think that's what, I take that's what you were trying to say from that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. I mean, I've got nothing but admiration for all our GPs and healthcare professionals. You know, it's absolutely phenomenal. And that's, like you've just summed it up there. So I'm grateful that I had you there, Gary, because I wasn't trying to be disrespectful to anyone. I was just, I don't have a disrespectful bone in my body, but just trying to understand that you don't quite appreciate maybe until a few years down the line how much of a weight a diagnosis of diabetes is. And it's not something I tend to go into a lot, but it's life-changing and it's sort of there forever. So that can be fundamentally
you highlighted a point of
you need to have it. Yeah,
when you never get your bag of sweets, you highlighted the point. It is life-changing because people then didn't bring you what your brother got, which was a big bag of sweets, Tesco bag of sweets.
Exactly.
And you're looking, at everybody thinking, well, wait a minute, where's my bag of sweets at?
Exactly.
I want that bag of sweets. So
but that's also the thing that I want to help change now is because you still get the whole, can you eat that? And my mum is the worst. Like, my mum still says that. And she puts her hand to her mouth every single time and she's like, I'm so sorry, I didn't, like, it's just... But then it becomes like second nature, something that you always associate. So the fact is, okay, at that time, 20 years ago, you probably wouldn't have had a big bag of sweets, but now you wouldn't think anything of being able to do it, because we all know how to sort of bowl us for that and to correct it and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so trying to get to that point has moved forward a lot, you know, but that whole you can't eat that is also a big gripe.
Yeah, and I think that's a thing. It's like the understanding of diabetes, and that is, so this follows on great to the next question. So, were you aware of what was happening, or do you feel like your parents kind of shielded you initially? And if so, how did it change your life?
You know, I don't think any of us really understood what the hell was going on. Sorry, mind my language, but I don't think any of us knew what was going on in that situation. I think that's the good thing about maybe 20 years ago. You didn't have as much information as you have now. So I think sometimes you can just be an information encyclopedia, and that's not always the answer. You know, you like it's nice to learn stuff as a process. Yeah. So I always understood it as a process. And honestly, I think maybe I was shielded a little bit. Maybe we learned together, but I was always remember the like being in the hospital and the diabetes team, like putting protocol in places, putting things in places. And it was step by step. I remember going with my mum back to school and they were like, oh, well, come into school one day and we can. So I remember going back to school before I went back to school with my mum to talk to the team about it, to talk to school about it. And that was all just a step by step process. And then I was like, the kid in school who had a box of Mars bars in the cupboard, I was like, this is ace. So I think it was always, I look like the more people get to know me, the more you realize that I love to be different. So to be different is a special thing. And I think we forget that. I think that a lot of people spend a lot of time trying to be the same as everybody else. And it takes us a long time, some more longer than others, but being different is awesome. And I love that. And what that difference is, it doesn't matter, but we all need to sort of embrace our differences and realize that we're not all the same, and that's what makes us all special.
Yeah, and I think that's a great thing you've just highlighted there. It's we are all different, and that is what makes us unique. We're not all the same. We've all got different anatomy and different structures to how our body reacts to certain things. So what you can do and things you can eat might not work for me, but vice versa, things I can eat might not work for you. And I think that's what I think that's something we all like to hear is we are all different. We're not built the same way. And diabetes has to be customized to the person and not the condition. It has to be customized and built around about us. As I was saying earlier, it's about us. We are still people and we have different makeups to other people. And we need to make sure our healthcare is treated that way with diabetes as well, because there is going to be things that are different for one diabetic to another. So I assume, did you have anybody in your close family that was living with diabetes, or was this all new completely to the whole family?
Completely new, nobody. Since my little cousin's been diagnosed, but at the time it was just me. Which again was awesome because, you know, I like to be special or like to be different, not special. But yeah, it was kind of just like, again, it probably helped that that meant we didn't know much or anything.
Yeah.
So it meant that we were just like allowed to, you know, to find out ourselves and understand ourselves and move forward ourselves. Like even at school, there was no one. So like whether that's because I'm on an island of 85,000 people, of which half are retired, you know, maybe that was a difference, but there wasn't anyone my age. We was one in another school, but that maybe that helped. The fact that I wasn't overwhelmed or overfaced with information.
Yeah. And I think you did highlight earlier, now that we've got the dawn of things like social media, we've got Google and all of this, you can get a plethora of information, which can then become overwhelming for us. Because we then sit and read and we're like, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to know this anymore. Because it's not, everybody tells you all different facts and how it works for them and what works for them, what doesn't. And people are trying to navigate around about this and fit into one of these boxes that other people are saying and forgetting that we're all individual and we need to find what works for us still. And I think that's a really good point, is what you were saying as well earlier about technology. Growing up in the early noughties and being diabetic was potentially a little bit easier because you never had access to so much technology. You find out things that can then become bombard you and become complex and confusing because you're looking and thinking, well, how does that work and how can that person do that? But I don't know how to do it. So
exactly, because sometimes like I look at it in terms of other aspects of my life. You might fit partly into one box and partly into another box, and then you commit to wanting to fit that box when you still then you kind of forget that you've got similarities to another box.
Yeah.
And then you kind of don't really commit to anything, and then you just scratch the surface of parts, and then you never really get a right answer. Yeah. So sometimes those boxes are so difficult because you don't really fit in one. So that's what I try to keep away from that sort of stuff, because not just with diabetes, but with my life, with training, with everything, because like life's not linear, you know, there's bits and pieces here, there and everywhere. So you got to make sure that's the case, and you do what's best for yourself, and we've got so many people around who can help with that. It's great.
Yeah, and it's fantastic to hear that. So I know how you administered your insulin just now, because you are on MDI and you've already told us that. So how has blood glucose testing altered for you over the years? Do you still do finger pricks, or do you have like flash monitor or a CGM that you use?
Well, yeah, I mean, I probably utilize absolutely everything, but I'm a numbers fiend, you know. A bit about my background, but I went to university before I turned professional, or before I chased my professional dream of cycling. And I have a degree in quantity surveying, so numbers are my game, you know. Like, I absolutely adore numbers, which, again, is probably a bad thing, but you know what, everybody's got, like, logbooks of diabetes with numbers and everything written down. You know, I have Excel spreadsheet after Excel spreadsheet on numbers. Okay, none of them are really complete, and I kind of, you phase in with one and out of the other and X, Y, and Z. But I'll always be finger testing, you know. Even with the use of flash glucose and CGMs, you know, I'm still like, okay, let me just check, because I'm inquisitive. I want to know what the feeling I'm feeling is. Yeah. What's my training and that sort of stuff, you know, and just accuracy as well. So I'm doing everything, whether I've got all the devices on known to man. I think I'll always still blood test just to check.
You sound like an old school, like you like the finger pricks for the security and the reassurance and being able to identify how you felt at that time. And I think so,
but you know, sometimes, I mean, I don't know if it's just me, but your sensor comes to an end and you're like, oh, maybe it's like, some people put one on and warm it up before the other one's finished. But I'm sometimes like, oh,
no,
break, you know, like kind of that sort of thing. So sometimes that can be quite nice. So
I'm not one of the people, I will be honest right now. I do not put on a warm up when the other one's about to finish.
Yeah.
Because when a sensor's coming off, I'm hoping everything's coming off so I can go in for either a bath or a shower.
Yeah, a bath. Yeah, exactly.
Technology attached to me so that I can actually feel like I've washed my full body and not left this big half-inch space to an inch space somewhere in my body that's got everything grown underneath it.
It's like when you take your shoes off and put your feet in warm sand when you go on holiday for the first time. It's ice.
Yeah. So the next thing I'm going to ask is, and I know that you don't use, like, you try not to follow things like other people, but a question that I would love to know is, what do you wish you'd known when you were newly diagnosed? Is there anything you wish that you had been told when you were newly diagnosed that would have made the transition easier for you?
I like to say, like, I get this question posed to me a lot, and tends to be by parents, and I try to support as many in our community, if not everyone, as I can. And I'm going to rephrase it in terms of, and I hope you don't mind what information I would give to a parent or to somebody else. And, you know, I want to tell them that it will be okay. That's kind of fundamentally it. You know, like, there's no silver bullet. There's no final answer. There's nothing else, but things will be okay.
Yeah.
And that's kind of just like, it's nice to somebody sometimes, you know, to put their arm around you and just say, don't worry, you know, things are going to be okay. We'll work it out. We'll figure it out one step at a time. You know, there's always a way to do that. And sometimes it's that security of knowing that it's going to be okay. I remember my auntie calling me, because they don't live in the Isle of Man, but they were on on the Isle of Man. So she had the same diagnosis as I had because they were on holiday here when she was diagnosed, because they were like, oh, they FaceTimed me and I was at uni, and they were like, we think your cousin's got type 1 diabetes as well. And I was like, and then I remember hanging up on the FaceTime, and then them coming, my auntie ringing me directly, and she just burst into tears. I was like, listen, diabetes is honestly the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I don't say that lightly, but it is, like I say it again, like it's given me a community, a family, a purpose. And I will not have anyone tell me any different, because it's me, you know, it's my decision and it's my idea of it. But if somebody could just put their arm around you and say, listen, it's going to be okay, then for me, that's enough. Then you figure the rest out as you go along.
Do you know, can I just say that was one of the best answers I have probably heard from that question. And also, I love the fact that you keep reinforcing that diabetes has made your life, made you feel like your life is better and you've achieved loads from it. Because I'm forever saying about my diabetes as well, when I go for job interviews, I tell people instantly what diabetes has taught me. The time management, the being able to handle complex issues, the being able to do project management, all of that stuff. Because you know what? Diabetes taught me all of that. It taught me how to manage things that most people would potentially look at and think, how do you do that? So I think that is one of the best answers I have heard for that. So thanks very much for that. And this...
No, thank you. I mean, to add to that, you know, I got a routine, what you're saying, basically, I got a routine, those skills at 10, that 18, 19, 20, 25-year-olds don't have.
So I would agree.
At 10, I was probably mature beyond my years because of the situation I found myself in. And I'm not trying to say that I'm super mature, you know, but I had to put in place protocol to allow me to live.
Yeah.
And that's something that it built so many like good qualities that's what I tried to focus on, because you know, you walk around with diabetes and it isn't easy, and I'm not trying to say it's easy,
we know it's not easy,
but I can't focus on that because if I focus on that, then it becomes a negative, and I don't want to attach a negative to a condition that I can't really get rid, you know, you can't do anything about it really, you can just live with it. So to live with it, I'm going to be in control, you know, absolutely 100%. I'm the boss and that's it. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. I need to just like, if it's not, then it becomes a hard cycle. And I'm not trying to say, don't feel bad about it or don't do this, or it's going to be easy, because it's not, but there's absolutely the most amazing people and the most amazing community, like all you guys who make that and understand it. And you know, sometimes somebody just, like you say, put their arm around you, just knowing that somebody else gets it makes it that much easier.
And I think that's what it is. It's about, and this is what this space is all about. So this is what Diabetes Chat is all about. And this is why Tom developed it and has brought people in to help support and nourish and grow with them. It's about having somebody there that understands you and can help you achieve what you want to do, and isn't going to judge you or be judgmental, because we've all been there. We know, everybody knows, diabetes isn't easy. And there will be days where you look at it and think, I can't handle this. And there will be days where some people, because I do it myself, sometimes I don't give 100% effort, because I look and I think, I've got about 25% time for diabetes a day. The other 75% has to go on things that I want to do. And I think that's a great thing, is like what you're saying, it's all about that. It's about the peer support and things. So that is my section finished. There was one more question in it, but I think that Kez will really want to ask this question because it's something Kez loves. So Kez will catch you later. I'm going to put you back to Philippa, who will go through the very fun bit, which is all the nice questions and getting to learn more about you. Sam, it has been
wonderful.
A complete and utter pleasure to speak to you, and thank you for
taking
the time.
No, it's my pleasure too. No, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure as well. And if I can do anything to help, then just let me know. Just drop me a message.
Thanks very much for that, Sam.
Cheers.
Well, thanks there, Gary. That was amazing. I don't feel that good having to follow Gary now. But anyway, I'm going to talk to you about cycling and see how you go. So I was reading some things about you, and it sounds like you were a really sporty child anyway.
Yes.
So what sort of sports did you take part in? Because it sounded like sports was your life.
Yeah, it was. What sport didn't I do? You know, I've always been super competitive. I think that's what happens when you've got a brother who's 18 months older. You want to win absolutely everything. Absolutely everything was a sport, you know, like who could tidy their room quicker. So, okay, that wasn't very often, but like who could do something quicker. I made everything a competition. I must have been an absolute nightmare, but I've always had an endurance brain, so I've always wanted to sort of do those kind of sports, running, athletics, cross country. But then I would play basketball at school. I'd be playing football, cricket, absolutely everything. And I just wanted to be the best at absolutely everything I did. And I guess that's just kind of what my competitive edge, where I want to be in absolutely anything I do, I want to do it 100%.
And did, when you developed type 1, did that affect your sport at all? Were you told to not play as much, or did it not affect you?
Not really. I mean, like, honestly, at 10, there wasn't really anything super competitive anyway. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of just like a lot of kick arounds and that sort of stuff. And I was playing in school, but there wasn't anything overly competitive. But again, you know, with the diabetes, if anyone said, well, you can't do that, I'd just be like, well, you just sit down and watch me. So without, you know what we get defensive and fiery, don't we? So, I don't want to speak for everyone, but most of us will get fiery about the diabetes. So that kind of was something that was already inbuilt in me with my competitive edge. You know, it's either if it's not a competition, I'll make it one. And then whether that's with myself or with my diabetes, then that's probably part of the game.
Oh, wow. And you started with triathlons.
Yeah. So, well, at a bit further back, going sort of through my teenage years, I did a lot of cross country. I was Isle of Man School's cross country champion twice in a row. Then at the same time, I was playing football. I was playing sort of senior Ireland team football. I got to the semi-finals of the British Counties Cup playing football. And then I was at the age of like 17, 18, I kind of lost at heart with football a little bit through no reason other than it's kind of just the national sport and you play and you play and you play. And I loved it, but I was going to university and I was like, I'd done a few triathlons growing up. My dad had been involved in triathlon all the way through my younger years. I'd always followed cycling. We'd always been a cycling family. I'd never really done anything on the bike. I'd just always been around the environments. My dad organized a lot of local races, so I'd always help out at them, but I would never really had the bug for the bike. And I'd grown up with a bike, but I'd never raced. And then I'd done a few triathlons. I'd been pretty good. I remember working closely with the diabetes support team over here to figure out the process of doing a triathlon. Obviously it was going to be sort of 2.5 to 3 hours of exercise. How could we put that into place? And I think I recall, it was sort of, I started the race at like 7 and I finished at like 7.4, and it doesn't matter really what happened in between, but that was just a good indication that I had a good positive feedback for myself from that situation. So I'd done a lot as a kid, in terms of junior triathlons, mini triathlons, but being a new sport at that time, sorry, I'm going to talk a lot. If I get too much, then just say. But we might need a few hours. But I kind of enjoyed the process. So I kind of was, as a kid, even like 10, 11, 12, doing junior triathlons that were super competitive. So I'd always been in and around it. But being a new sport, the opportunities were still very small. But then I was going to uni. I was like, right, realistically, I'm a year after everybody else going. I took a year out. I did some work over in the Isle of Man around quantity surveying to just make sure that's what I wanted to do. And I was like, well, let's go to uni and start. And I went to football trials. I was taken onto one of the teams, but it wasn't for me at that point. So I was like, I'm definitely going to go and try the triathlon. So I found a really nice group of people and just really felt at home immediately. And I obviously said I'd come from like sort of a cross-country background. Then I went into triathlon, and I think like I'd done a few obviously, so I wasn't sort of a newbie, but I kind of got involved. And I think within 12 months I'd qualified to represent Great Britain at age group worlds. So I went sort of, that's where my sort of contact with the team first came, because I did world championships in 2013 in Hyde Park.
Mm-hmm.
So I did world champs there at age group level, and then sort of posted a photo a few months later, and the team picked up on it, and that's kind of where my love affair with Team Novo Nordisk came from.
Yeah, I mean, I think those of us within the community, we do support them a lot. They're amazing. So you were doing triathlons, you were competing at a high level in that. What made you decide to switch to just cycling?
Well, I remember applying for the elite team, the triathlon team with Team Novo Nordisk, and the owner of the team who I mentioned before, Phil Sutherland,
mm-hmm.
he actually saw my application and he was like, would you like to come and try out for the development team? And I was like, ooh, maybe. I hadn't really thought about it, but will I be able to finish my degree? I had a year left. And they were like, no, you'd need to be based in America. And at that point, I actually probably was wise beyond my years, but I said, I can't. I need to finish my degree because I think my parents would have killed me. And it was probably the right decision. If I'd known now what I was leaving behind or what I was risking, it might be different, but at the end of the day, I needed to have my degree. So I joined the triathlon set up. I did some outreach events for them. I did a lot of representation for them in that final year. I came second at British Championships in 2015. I had an absolute whirlwind 6 weeks because I went from 2015. I went Geneva for European Championships, home for graduation. Then I went to British Championships, came second. And then I flew out to America to do the Talent ID camp. Now, I went to the Talent ID camp for Team Novo Nordisk thinking, oh, I'm, 24, 25, I'm going to help out. You know, I'm already on the elite setup, so I'm just going there to support and I'm going to be there to show them the ropes. And then sort of a couple of weeks later, I had this email saying, well, first of all, I'd just graduated. Mm. And then 2 weeks, I'd also done a placement year at university with the biggest quantity surveying firm in the UK. And they'd accepted me on the graduate scheme for the following year. So I'd already had a job lined up. And then 2 weeks later, I'd got this sort of email to say, well, here's a job offer. We want you to come and join the development team. I was like, okay. And I backward and forward in my head, I was asking questions and I spoke to my dad and, you know, he's been a stalwart through the whole process. And me and my dad probably clash a lot. And he might laugh. He will never listen to this anyway, because he doesn't have Twitter, but we're probably too similar, but he's always the person I would go to for advice. And he was never going to give me any. He was like, well, you know how hard cycling is. You've watched it since you're a kid and it's never going to work out, blah, 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 blah. And I remember like finally coming up with, after speaking to the development team coach, just came up with the inference that I want to try this. You know, if I'm going to try it, I'm going to try it now. And I emailed the coach back and said, I'd like to accept. I copied in my dad. And then within 20 seconds, I had an email back from my dad saying, let's do this. So, you know, he wanted me to make the decision. He knew I had to make the decision. But I went from just graduating to not really thinking about cycling as a future, even I had never raced, to actually, within 2 weeks, he'd driven up to Newcastle, got on the boat, driven up to Newcastle. We'd packed all my 4 years in Newcastle into the back of the car and I was heading home. And it was sort of mid-November. I handed him a resignation and I had a week of holidays. So basically I took one day because I was still on my probation. I took one day, had the rest of the week off, and then I was home and I was all of a sudden 1st of January full-time cyclist.
My goodness.
Yeah.
So going from that sounds amazing. You were saying about all the travel, which I know, being a cyclist, you must travel because obviously the tours and races are all over.
Yeah.
One question I have about you is, how do you cope with the time differences? Do you always keep on a home time, or do you have time to adapt to the time zones that you're in?
I think it's a great question. And this isn't, I hope this doesn't sound sort of cocky or arrogant, because that's not what it's intended, but I think I'm on Sam Brand time 100% of the time. So, and that's not meant to be like, say I have my own time zone. That's just meant like I have no clue what time of day it is ever. I think it gets to the point where you just, because I raced Tour Rwanda last week. I came home for 2 days, had my birthday, then I went to Italy, then I was 2 days in Italy, and I go to Tour Taiwan in 3 days, 4 days. So that's plus 8 hours. So you kind of just get to the point where you just have to deal with every situation. And whether that's diabetes management, sometimes it's easier to keep it on home time. Sometimes it's easier to just switch. And again, that's individual. But for me, it's kind of like I just have to deal with every situation. You're never there long enough to sort of acclimatize either way. So I'm in Taiwan for maybe 8 days. The race is 5 days. I'll get jet lagged there. I'll get jet lagged coming back. I'll get sort of, again, it'll take me forever to understand what time of day it actually was or when it actually was. So it's kind of just like you just have to sort of go with the flow and do your best, you know, like that's just kind of where I'm at. You know, I don't really know what time of day it is, when to sleep, when to stay awake, but being a cyclist, you're always tired. So
you're always sleeping when you need to.
Yeah.
So what is your training schedule like? Are you on the bike every day? Because that is my imagination of it, being a professional cyclist.
Yeah, I think last year I was on maybe 335 days of the year, more, 340 days maybe. But I love the bike. I love being active. So, yeah, it is pretty much like every single day. And there's obviously rest days in there, travel days, and those days where the flight might be plus the time zone might be. You might lose like a day, so those ones you obviously not. But yeah, it's my home, you know. It's where I feel happy, comfortable. So yeah, it's a lot. I mean, in terms of volume in training camp in start of January, we're looking at 30 hours a week. It's not always 30 hours, but you're looking at somewhere between 20 and 30 hours a week.
How do you balance your nutrition to ride and your type one?
I think everything goes in all in one, you know, because obviously when you're on the bike, you're thinking about fueling and it's all sort of works in together. You know, I do everything as a sportsman. I don't do everything, if that makes sense, you know, like I don't like, there's still a lot of people who understand, like I said before, you can't eat that, blah, blah, blah. Well, everything I do is as a sportsman. So then the diabetes just has to fall in line with that. And that's probably me being like, no, you'll listen to what I'm going to say, diabetes. I'm in charge here. So that's kind of how I look at it. And I'd make sure that the decisions come based on the training I'm going to be doing, not on other inputs. Because, you know what diabetes is like. It's so not hit and miss, but, you know, I'm trying to find a word for it. But it's so, no 2 days are the same. So if you're constantly trying to chase how the diabetes, you'll never be on top of it. You know, it's difficult because I always say that I'm such a proactive person. I find it really difficult because I think constantly diabetes, you have to be reactive to every single situation and that's find that difficult. So I think like, okay, why try and change that? Let's just be on top of what I can be on top of. And that's my training.
Yeah. Oh no, I agree with that. Best laid plans and all that, but you end up winging it in the end and doing that. And with your nutritional requirements, and this is one I thought of and I was really there, obviously you're expending a lot of energy and that, so you must take in quite a lot of carbs, etc., I am imagining. Are your nutritional requirements and the way you fuel during a race the same as a non-type 1 rider? Are there any differences that you know of?
Not that I know of, no, but you know what the way I like to look at it is, I've got diabetes, I understand what my body's doing a bit more, you know. So if you put me and another rider without diabetes on the bike, we're both going to run out of energy at some point. If you just put us in a straight line and just tell us to ride, at some point we're going to need to fuel. I like to think that diabetes has given me the ability to notice changes in my body. So notice when I might need to fuel a bit more, when I might need to fuel you know, like I can understand that I feel what that feeling is. You know, obviously anyone who's in endurance sport, you've heard of a bonk.
Yeah.
So you kind of get that vibe from that feeling from being associated with diabetes. Okay, it's not the same, but at least you know what your body's doing a little bit. So I find that it's an advantage. And okay, maybe it's not, but that's just the way I've always looked at it.
And with that, because you say you wear a sensor So you're there. And didn't the UCI ban them for non... Well, they're banned during races. I believe they're still banned.
Yes.
So
yes,
have you as a team got, like, obviously dispensation because you need them for your type one?
Yes.
But are there any restrictions put on the use of them for you? Like, can you not share... Or if you share your readings, the team can't advise you on your readings or something like that. Are there any restrictions on how you can use the sensors?
Well, the sensors just given for me, you know, it's something that I have control of. It's not something that's broadcast. It's just something that is for me, you know, if I've got my sensor, my reader in my back pocket, I just check and go from there. You know, it's not something that the team are advising me on.
Oh,
it's kind of, you know, like, it's just something that you know what to do with your diabetes in that situation.
Okay, that's interesting. So you just keep it in your back pocket, even you don't have it on your handlebars or anything with the other?
No, just I when I race, I have my receiver, so I can see, I can check and that sort of thing. Sometimes I've been known to tape it to the handlebars in a race to be able to see it live. But, you know, everybody's different, and, like, that depends on what the rider wants to see or do. Or sometimes do they want the information, don't they want the information? The information will be there for who wants it and who needs it.
Okay, that sort of thing. And whilst you're actually riding, if you are going hypo, what's your go-to thing to eat?
Well, oh, good question. Whatever's in my pocket, really, you know, whatever I can get my hands on. The thing is, you need to be able to fuel on whatever, wherever you are in the world. So it's kind of just whatever I can get my hands on. A lot of the time it's just sponsored. We use Morton as a sponsor in the team. So it's really, really good. I enjoy it. Like, that's nice. But a lot of the time when you're with the Italian staff, we have fantastic staff. We have they call them like the Italian cookies, because it's always the Italian soigneur who will bring them. But it's just a nice cookie that he gets from his local bakery, and he wraps in tinfoil, and that's always a nice one to pull out your pocket.
Oh, that's and do you have to inject during the race?
Well, again, everybody's different. It's difficult to go into detail, you know, because obviously I'm not a doctor. But you just do what you need to do. So it's like, if you need to stop to the toilet, you stop for the toilet. If you need to correct, you need to correct. If you need to go up, you go put sugar in. You know, it's kind of I'm a professional athlete, so, you know, if I need to take one hand off the bars to do something. Then I think you're more stable on a bike than me.
I've never been able to ride without my hands on the handlebars.
Well, sometimes I need to stop as well, you know, so it's just one of those. You just kind of don't really think about it. It's great, intrigues me, because you ask me questions that I probably don't even think about. I just do it, you know. It's just like anything, you just kind of do it. It's very rare, you know, because obviously you're putting out all that time and you're riding hard, and, you know, sometimes you need to make corrections, and sometimes you just do as you can do, and sometimes it's just as and when.
Yeah. Oh, I think to be honest, as a type one, we wing it the whole time.
I've been called a winger a lot of the time, and I take it quite personally when someone, not like, if someone says it in a negative way, I'm like, hold on, I don't wing it. It's it's science, you know. But if I call it winging, that probably makes more sense.
Oh, I have to say, one of my favorite words that I picked up from, I think it was Twitter or something, it's an American one, is rather than bowlers, you swag, scientific wild ass guess. I just think that is type one in one.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
There's lots of science behind it, but
until you don't really know anything until everything goes wrong, do you? So there you go.
Yeah. And how does the different types of stages affect you? So say if it's a sprint stage or a mountain, or if it's a TT, do you have different strategies for each stage?
Not massively, but the adrenaline's a big one, and kind of just like, I think in the stage races, it's all different to the individual races. You know, you're getting more heightened in the back end of a stage race, more fatigue, and that definitely changes it, how you sleep. So there's not really a strategy. You're just kind of playing with the figures as they come up and see.
Yeah. And what type of stage do you prefer?
I prefer just like I prefer a bit of a stage race, but just a bit punchy, you know. No, none of these mountain goats long climbs, you know. I can get over some punches, but I just like to be challenged, I guess. So punchy road stage, I guess. But I think I'm still learning the ropes, you know. I'm still going in and understanding everything. I mean, something that we've got a lot of people who probably know a bit of cycling and some who don't know a bit of cycling. But in terms of context, I raced my first ever bike race in sort of April, May 2016. I raced Milan San Remo, which is the biggest one day race in the world tour race, less than what, 18 months later. So it's phenomenal, really, when you think about it. And I still have to pinch myself, you know. I mean, I'm dreaming, and every single day I realize how much of a pleasure and a privilege to do this for the diabetes community and to do it for everyone affected by diabetes. And it sounds so cliche, but I've raced multiple world tour races, I've been in world tour breakaways, I've been to two Commonwealth Games, and to do that all whilst realizing that my commitment is to the diabetes community is phenomenal, and that's something I'm forever grateful for.
Oh, no, it's amazing. And I think one of the things, because I do follow cycling, I'm addicted to the Tour de France. That is just like three weeks. I'm just like, don't. Yeah. Oh, I tell you, there's going to be a whole load of us there. If Team Novo Nordisk are ever there, we've all said we're going. And that's be nice. And things like that. But I think it's very similar to me too. I love Formula One as well.
Me too.
And I think it's like there's a winner, but actually it's the team and the tactics.
Yeah.
You can be the best cyclist or the best driver, but if you haven't got the team, and like in cycling with your teammates and people supplying you and sheltering you and all this, that and the other, you're nowhere. And that's what I love about it, is that it's a mind sport as well as a physical one.
Yeah, I love being tested in every single, like, I just like to be challenged. And I think, like, there's a different challenge. I love tactics. I love, like, understanding situations. I really like how things work. And I've always been sort of involved in understanding, you know, like, the intricacies of things. So, like, if something's broken, I want to fix it. Or understanding how things work and how you can put things back together. So that's kind of the thing I love. And I guess that's kind of why I've been able to do what I do.
Yeah. Are you okay, Tom? I've just noticed Sam, we're at nearly at 5:30. Are you okay just a little bit longer?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the problem for me is that's not a problem. I eat late. So I think everybody normally has dinner by 8:30, but that's probably where I normally have dinner. So I haven't actually had dinner yet, but it'd be okay. I mean, I'm not in a rush. I'm just sat at my kitchen table. Okay. So this is my thing, you know. I love to give back. And yeah. I'm just sad that I've not been able to give back to you guys earlier than I have done, but I'm hoping that you've got me for as long as you want me. If you want me till midnight, then everybody else is fast asleep.
Do not say that, Sam, because we can still be chatting at that time.
Yeah, well, I like to be accessible, you know, and that's something that I want to do in sort of, I know this is more further, but
We did a 24-hour chat for World Diabetes Day, and a lot of people keep saying to me, are you going to do it again? I think people like yourself, we'll get on, and you guys will keep us going for a few hours.
I'd love to be involved. I think, like,
yes,
I want to do more to help. I want to do more to support. You know, we have this platform, and your platform is special. Everybody's platform is special. Like I said before, everybody's individual. But I want to be able to use my platform whilst I have a platform. And that's not saying, I'm not trying to, I have to make sure that I'm not coming across arrogant saying I have a platform. I just mean in terms of, like, everybody has a platform and this is mine and I want to use it now. I want to support people. I want to give people their chance to shine. I want to give people their understanding and realize if I can help someone, whether that's one person or 100 people, it doesn't matter. You're better off just helping the one person. Helping one person is as powerful as helping a million people.
Yeah.
So you can't just think of the end goal. It has to be like step by step, one smile at a time.
Oh, no. Yeah. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. That's how I look at it. So you mentioned the Commonwealth Games. How did it feel to represent your country in two Commonwealth Games, and particularly a home games as well?
Oh, honestly, it's phenomenal. I can't really explain it because, I mean, both Commonwealth Games, I was very much, you know, taken out of the context of racing for Team Novo Nordisk. Now, I'm always racing for Team Novo Nordisk. Everything I do is for the diabetes community, as I've said. But, like, when I'm at the games, I realise that I've got an Isle of Man jersey on, and that Isle of Man jersey means the world to me, but mm-hmm. also the diabetes community. So both times I've actually raced with, I know you retweeted it earlier, but with custom-made shoes, which had 50 names both times, 50 names of people who not just wanted to sort of not just people with diabetes, but to show their support for the diabetes community. And I realized that we don't have to just singly say that you can only be in this community if you have diabetes. Like, this community is made up of people who want to help, and that's parents of kids with type 1, that's family yeah. members of people with type 1. They all want to help as well, and I wanted to welcome them into that. So I'm not racing with the Team Novo Nordisk jersey, but I've got a sign to show that I'm racing for everyone with diabetes and everyone affected by diabetes. So I've if anyone wants to see, the photos are out there, but they've got some shoes with 50 names on both times. That was in Gold Coast yeah. in 2018 and in Birmingham in 2022. But, you know, like, when I look at our team, I was racing with, you know, and I don't want to name drop, but like Mark Cavendish.
I was just going to say, you can.
Racing with the best racers in the world, and you're racing. It's you're riding with, like, all my teammates are world beaters, you know. Everyone in Team Novo Nordisk are phenomenal. I love every single one to bit pieces, and that's so, you know, I do everything to help anyone. And but to race with, like, Cavendish, and to race with Ben Swift, to race with these guys, and, you know, we have a phenomenal team at the Commonwealth Games, Mark Christian, and all these guys, you know, we had such a phenomenal team that it just, the environment was insane. But again, like, the overriding factor is me. It's just doing it for the diabetes community, and to do it at home games is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, it must be amazing, the whole thing there. And do you feel there's a difference for when you're riding, like, there for your country rather than Team Novo Nordisk, the support you're given, or is it that you're very independent with your type 1 anyway, so it doesn't really matter as much what's around you? Because I'm assuming in Team Novo Nordisk, obviously, they're quite au fait with all things type 1.
Well, yeah, the thing is with Team Novo Nordisk, you don't talk about diabetes. I guess, like, if you put 100 people with diabetes in the room, you don't, last thing you probably talk about is diabetes. You talk about everything else. So that's kind of what it's like with the team. You know, we're just mates and you're just friends. And it's just the same when you go into any sporting world. A lot of people just want to talk about everything but the sport. So it's nice, you know, it's just meeting like-minded people, whether that's whatever you've got in common, it tends to be the thing that you don't talk about.
Okay. And just because this just fascinates me, with the pro teams, I believe that there aren't any type 1 riders on other teams. They're all in Team Novo Nordisk.
Correct.
Do you think other teams would ever take a type 1 rider on?
Oh, I don't know. It depends if like, I just want to be remembered for my cycling ability. I don't want to be, you're only there because you got diabetes.
Oh, no,
and
no.
I'll never have anyone say that to me. But also, at the end of the day, why would I necessarily go somewhere else when, you know, like, this team is giving me everything?
Oh, and no, no. I wasn't meaning yourself and moving. But
no, I know what you're trying, but that's just my way of answering the question. Yeah. You know, it's just like, I don't think there's an agenda against diabetic riders being picked up by other teams. I just think that, you know, it's just like, it's not something fundamentally you get picked for or picked on, or that's just like, if I've got diabetes, where would you want to be other than a team where everybody gets it?
Yeah. And I suppose the thing is, anyway, with other teams, if you're good enough to ride, do you know, like, they're just
I don't think there's an agenda or anything against type 1, you know, but that's not trying to take away again that we're not good enough to ride at another team. So
yeah. Oh, no, it just fascinates me that there aren't.
Well, I mean, when you think about the diabetes population and then you think about the world sporting population, it's a minuscule everything, you know. It's like, you're talking about who makes it as a professional athlete full stop is like, what, less than probably 0.1% of the global population. You think how much of the global population have type 1 diabetes, So you're talking about minuscule numbers, like to find another athlete. Like we've got riders like Peter Custor, who's a phenomenal experienced rider. He was diagnosed because he crashed in a bike race and had a blood test, and he was diagnosed through that blood test. And then his focus is on coming to ride for us. It's not on anything else. It's on trying to change the diabetes community. So why would you, that's the number one point, you know, when a lot of riders are diagnosed with diabetes, or the ones who are, they're pointed towards Team Novo Nordisk.
Oh, wow. That's really good. So I'm going to draw the cycling bit to an end, because we have chatted a long time, which has been amazing. So what is your ultimate ambition in cycling? What would be the pinnacle for you?
Win
and I know you've done amazing things already, but...
Win, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't get me wrong, like, I want to pull on the yellow jersey. I want to be world champion. Whether that happens, you know, you can never tell, but it's not for a want of trying. I'm going to be pushing it. And I'd love to win a race. I want to get on the podium. I want to be successful.
Yeah. Oh, no. And do you think potentially you will get, Team Novo Nordisk will get into the Tour de France, or, you know,
that's the dream, isn't it?
And yeah.
If anyone from ASO is listening, then Team Novo Nordisk would like to go to the Tour de France. But I speak that from Sam Brand, not from the team. But
yeah,
you know, like, it would be the dream to do the Tour de France. It's any cyclist's dream. So yeah, I mean, let's hope we can put dreams on the table, because that's where they need to be. You know, you need to chase something. I'm always a firm believer of chasing targets, and that's a goal. And I want to be at the Tour de France one day. That would be ultimate goal. But we can't rule out the steps in between. You know, like, you can't just say, what do you want to do finally, and forget the bit in the middle. The bit in the middle is winning other bike races. It's getting the best results possible. It's changing the world. It's changing my world. It's changing day by day somebody's life, you know. That's the mini goals, and then we have bigger goals at the end.
Oh, no, fantastic. And I would say, when you Team Novo Nordisk did Tour of Britain, and I've been, and if anybody goes, do go along to where the coaches are parked and things like that, and you'll have really good access, able to chat to the riders. It's amazing around the team buses, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to race in Britain more.
Yeah, you haven't done it recently, but
no,
it'd be good.
Not since I've been on the team. We did ride London in 2018, I want to say, my first year. We raced Ride London. That was a world tour, but not Tour of Britain since 2017. That was the year before I joined.
Yeah, no, but it is amazing. It's just one of those sports that I think you get access to the athletes like no other, really, which is fantastic. Well, that is the end of my little bit, and I'm going to pass you over to Kez, who's going to talk to you more about advocacy and peer support. But thanks a lot, Sam.
No, thank you. That was brilliant.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Kez. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Good. It's been really interesting listening to you guys chat, actually. So I've learned quite a lot about what you guys have been talking about, so that's been quite interesting for me. As Flipper said, the part that we discuss next is mostly around kind of mental health advocacy and peer support. So I guess that my first question is, what's your kind of view about mental health and managing mental health and emotional well-being as someone with diabetes?
Well, it's a funny question. Not funny question, but, you know, I've got, there's the mental health side of professional sport, and there's a mental health side of diabetes, and, you know, it can be difficult. And that's the whole thing, I guess, where I tried to protect myself, in terms of I try to make it positive as much as I can, because otherwise you go around in a forever ending cycle of it becoming a weight. And I try to do that. That's why this community is so important, because I think that you gain so much support from peer support than anything else.
Yeah, definitely. So we've talked a bit about advocacy before, and you've said that you're really passionate about it. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what you're already involved in, or what you would like to get involved in?
Well, yeah, I do some work with Diabetes UK and JDRF UK. I tried to do a lot on the Isle of Man in the sort of Diabetes Isle of Man group. I just want to make myself accessible. So if somebody needs something or go to talk, I do a lot of outreach events in the UK with Novo Nordisk. I just want to use my experience to benefit other people, because for me, unused experience or unshared experience is wasted. You know, if I've got experience and I can help one person, you know, I did a talk in Alderhay a few years ago, and there was a Liverpool game on at the same time, and only one person turned up, and, you know, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, only one person turned up. I was like, that's fine, you know, like, one person, if you can help one person, you help one person. If that's 100 people, as I said before, then you can help 100 people, but you shouldn't just disregard one. So it was nice to be put in those situations where you can, obviously it's nice to be able to help more, but I would love to do, I've spoken to Chris Bright, you know, Chris is a fantastic guy, and trying to do more in the Discovery Days and JDRF, and I know I've spoken to a lot of the guys at Diabetes UK. I just want to support everyone in any situation. That's why when Tom asked me to do this, I was like, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to caveat that with, I did say I might have to have a bit more like notice, or a bit more sort of, I might not be able to commit fully because you don't know when the schedule is going to come out. But to be able to take part in something like this is phenomenal. And, you know, if anybody wants me to chat, then just drop me a line, or needs anything, then just let me know.
Oh, that sounds really good. I think, like you said, sharing experiences is kind of half the problem, isn't it? Like, feeling like you're not on your own, I suppose.
Exactly.
Okay. So, what do you do if you're, you know, let's say, for example, you're having a bad day, or you're having a bad week, or whether it's to do with cycling or with diabetes, what do you do to improve things for yourself? What helps you?
You know, like, being on the Isle of Man, it's a phenomenal place to escape. It's great because you can go outside and walk the dog. You know, I was up walking the dog today and that sort of stuff. You know, just take your mind off what it is that's playing on your mind. You know, if that's the bike, then there's a situation where you just need to remove yourself. So just try and get some fresh air. I try to focus on something else, try and do something else. I love to draw, love to do something that is going to exercise my brain in a different way. Just trying to make sure that I have that ability to zone out every now and then is super important.
Yeah, definitely. I'm like that with the photography. It's great.
100%. Yeah, it's nice to have something else.
So I think you touched on this a little bit before, which is around some of the lack of understanding, or the stigmas that are attached to the lack of understanding of diabetes. But how do you think we can work towards changing some of those things?
I think it's just time and constantly sort of trying to empower other people. You know, you can't talk at other people. You have to help them. So it's kind of a mechanism of, like, giving people enough information to be able to make informed decisions themselves. Because, you know, if you talk at somebody, they don't listen. So it's just about trying to raise awareness, push that side of stuff. You know, I also like talk about anecdotes and stuff about to other people. You know, I was in a situation where I was at the Talent ID camp that I mentioned earlier, and I was sort of mentoring a group of people. And I like to mentor. I like to help some of the local children over here who've got diabetes and they kind of don't really know. And I kind of like to be that sort of mentor and try and help out. And not because for me, but because I know that when I was growing up, that would have helped me. So that's what I tried to do. And then, like, there was this one guy who was we were at the University of Georgia in Athens in Georgia. And there was obviously loads of summer camps going on. And one of them was athletics. Now, the guy knew that we were from Team Novo Nordisk Talent ID camp, a lot of young kids. And I'm sat on the table and we're talking, and this guy comes over and he's a bit ignorant. And he's like, how can you do sport with type 1 diabetes, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, hold on, what are you, like, he was quite aggressive. And it just, my competitive edge, I guess. But he was like, well, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, what are you here for? And he's like, well, I'm a runner and we're on a summer camp and I'm a 5K runner. I was like, well, what do you run 5K in? And he's like, well, 18, 19 minutes. And I was like, well, I've run a 15-minute 5K, so come back to me when you've done that. You know, it wasn't me trying to one-upmanship. It was just kind of trying to understand that ignorance, people can be ignorant, and ignorance isn't my problem. If somebody's ignorant, it's on them, and it's what I feel sorry for them. But then I have the responsibility to make sure that they have enough information to not be ignorant. So, and I'm not saying everybody's ignorant who doesn't know about diabetes. It's just the situation, you know. But if I don't help them understand or give them the information to understand, then I think that I haven't done enough.
Yeah, definitely. I get where you're coming from with that. So, I mean, the last question from me before we see if there's any questions from anyone else who's listening is, what are your hopes and aspirations for yourself and diabetes care and management?
You know, it's just, I just hope that everybody gets what they need. You know, I'm not the sort of person who's chasing a cure. I'm not the sort of person who's longing for something, because then again, I feel that puts power back onto my diabetes and not onto me. I just hope that everybody is successful in what they need to get. You know, like I said, we were in Rwanda recently, and you see the access to medication full stop is not quite what we're used to, for want of a better phrase. So I just hope that we as a group, as a community, can provide enough access, enough hope, enough inspiration to other people to be able to benefit. You know, hope is the most powerful thing. If you can hope, then, like, yeah, I think you can achieve a lot more. So for me, it's just, I'm not longing for anything. I'm longing to just support, be there, do what I can to make the world a better place.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thanks, Sam. What we're going to do now is I'm just going to come over back to Gary to see if there's anyone who's come with any questions from anyone who's listening or anyone who wants to ask a question.
Thanks, Kez. So there is one question I would like to know, Sam, in terms of trying to help us see the difference in level of care, and also for out of noisiness for me, because me and my partner are looking at houses in the Isle of Man.
Fantastic.
So I would like to know, and I'm sure the whole community wants to know, to find out the difference. What's healthcare like over there for you? Is it very similar to UK-wide, or is it slightly different to how the UK-wide healthcare system would be?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. You know, there's always going to be sort of complications, as you know, with the diabetes community. But I think, like, in terms of, like, access, you know, some postcodes get different access, yeah. And that's obviously something different. But I think, like, the Isle of Man is honestly the best place. And I don't say that just because I'm from here, because you probably are defensive over where you're from stuff. But the Isle of Man is phenomenal. And I would say I've been so fortunate to have grown up here. And, you know, we have reciprocal agreements in place in terms of health with the UK. So the Isle of Man is technically not in the UK.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, it's not in the UK, but it's something, it's a very proud place, and we have reciprocal agreements. So it's probably the same. I don't know, because when I was at university in Newcastle, I was in the NHS in Newcastle, and it, you know, it was exactly the same, pretty much. There's no, I wouldn't say there's a noticeable difference.
Yeah, that was just out of sheer nosiness, because it is my.
Yeah.
I think the whole community like to know where other people potentially are at for healthcare, because we might all just swarm over to the Isle of Man if they've got better healthcare.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, come over here and get everything. Yeah, no, it's but again, it gives me something to work on. You know, if there's always people we can help, so there's always more we can do.
Yeah, definitely, and I 100% agree with that. Now, is there anybody else on the speaker panel that would like to ask questions? Sean or Mary or MD?
Hiya, can you hear me? Oh, okay, cool. Hi, Sam. So really cool on what you're doing, obviously the team, and I hope it's going well. I've got one question. I don't know if you've already like had this question posed to you, because I came in a little bit late, sorry guys. So I tend to do like really long distances over like multiple days, so like gearing up to do an ultra distance race. And yes. One of the problems that I have is that my insulin sensitivity often changes. And obviously, yeah. I presume that would be the case for you doing your stage races and stuff. How do you kind of like get around that as like an individual? How do like your teammates get around that as well?
I did touch on it before about my like not much. So you didn't really miss anything, but I did say that my insulin, like the sensitivity changes over the longer stage races, but there's no rhyme or reason a lot of the time. And I'm at the point probably where the answer isn't probably what you want to hear, but to hear it in terms of it will change and there will be a variation that everybody's different. I keep saying that because I don't want anyone to think that there's a right answer, but it's just the fact that you're aware of it is the answer.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like you can then just deal with what's in front of you. Like I like to think that blood sugar is the answer, or the blood sugar level is the answer. What's the question? So, you know, like you watch these game shows where they give you the answer and you have to figure out what the question is. That's kind of where I'm at with being able to have access to like CGMs, flash monitoring. You have the answer always. And that's where we're so fortunate with those devices. You have the answer. It's just trying to pose that question next. So that's kind of the way I look at it. And I just realize that you can answer a question, keep answering those questions. And the fact that you're aware of it is probably more of an answer than you just need to figure out the question.
Yeah, I think that's a tough one for me. I'm still trying to figure it out. But no, yeah. I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Not at all. And I mean, if you want to talk about more endurance stuff, we just drop me a message and we can catch up about the endurance side.
Yeah, of course. Definitely will do. Cheers, mate.
No worries.
Is there anybody else that has any questions or anything we'd like to know before? Are we allowed to now let Sam go for his dinner because we've kept him longer than what we said we would?
Honestly, don't feel bad. Ask me questions. I'd rather ask whilst I'm here. I mean, dinner can wait.
No, you've been really generous with your time, Sam, and it's been an amazing chat. Thank you for your time and all the information, and it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
If I can just say, like, thank you so much, guys. Thank you for having me. Thank you for hosting me. Thank you for being amazing hosts. Thank you for the questions. But I like to, and I might regret this, but I like to think I wouldn't. I like to be accessible. I want to help. So if anyone has any questions, I've got a website. I've got social media. Ask me a question. And sometimes I can't answer certain things, and sometimes I don't have the answer. And sometimes there isn't an answer, but at least we're in the community together. We need to support each other. We need to do as much as we can for each other, and you all do phenomenal. So I just wanted to let you know how inspired I am by each and every one of you. I'm just another person. I'm not this professional athlete who never wants to speak to anybody. I'm probably as much of a fan of you all as you might be of me. And I'm not saying you fans of me, you know, you might turn around and go, God, he was a pain. But I'm just trying to highlight that I'm as much in this for you guys as you are for me and for the team and for everyone. So I just want to support. And from that, I hope that we can all gain something from each other.
Yeah. And I think that's it. We all learn from each other. And Team Novo Nordisk, as I said, I've been standing at the team bus and had chats with the riders as they're warming up, ready to go on a stage of a tour. And you're like, so generous with your time and things like that. So you can carry on listening if you like. You'll hear, we will be here till midnight probably. But we're just sort of opening it up now more to general chat. But it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been absolutely amazing. And I'm already can't wait to do it again.
Oh, don't say that. Tom, there you go. Signing you up right away.
I'm well, checking my schedule quick.
Yeah, get rid of my account quickly. I just leave and whatever. No, not at all.